This episode is recorded in honor of Rogue Kickstarter, incredible poet, TTRPG genius, and Riot lover extraordinaire. We love you, we miss you, and we will remember you as you were, wholly and completely in love with life.
Hello and welcome to Hey, I Like. We talk about all the things that make our little neurodivergent brains go bonkers. I am your host, Jess, and I am joined by JJ. JJ, would you like to tell everybody what we are talking about today?
Hello. We are talking about rats today. This was originally supposed to be a Lace episode 2, Electric Boogaloo, but we, as you might have noticed from a Tumblr post, we lost a pretty good friend of ours, and that sucks. And so I'm taking over their rat episode in honor of them and learning about their special interest instead.
Yeah, pretty nice idea, and I'm so glad that you're doing it.
I think I may have diverged from what exactly about rats interested them at several points. And by that I mean most of this information I don't think was particularly interesting to Ro, but it's fascinating to me. But what is learning in honor of someone if not, you know, taking an element of what they find interesting and running with it a mile in the other direction?
Exactly. And I think that Ro would love the fact that you went and learned more about their thing specifically for them and then just went, oh, wait, this other thing is really, really cool and I love it, because then they're sort of dragging you into their thing. By like,
God, they really are. So for reference, I spent like most of this week digging into research every now and again, and then last night I was, from about 11 p.m. I was tidying up some stuff to make sure that all the information was as accurate as I could make it, and then I blinked, and 3 hours later I finished up hyperfocusing, being hit with all the status effects. Then being like, I should probably go to bed. I need to record in 7 hours. But I do have some really interesting things, and also it led to a really interesting discussion with a friend of mine who used to work in a lab with rats, about assorted rat things. So, long story short, I think I might just be straight up fascinated by the process of domestication now. So, thanks, bro. So, I'm going to begin with like the basic stuff about rats before I leap into my domestication rant, because I feel like that's going to take up more of the episode. I don't think this is going to be a long episode, by the way. So listeners, you've probably seen how long the episode is going to be. It's not going to be our normal length. I don't think this is going to reach over an hour.
That's okay. So,
yeah, you're welcome, Jess. We don't have over like 3 hours of footage to edit.
Oh, so, I thank you so much.
So, all pet rats are descended from the Norwegian rat, also known as the brown rat or the common rat. And because they are all descended from this one rat, this one species of rat, without like, there hasn't been enough time really to create an entirely new species of rat that are purely known as like the fancy rats, the pet rats, the domesticated rats. They are still all Norwegian brown rats. So you have like, when you're breeding like ducks, for example, most domesticated ducks all come from one duck. But yeah, all of those are referred to as breeds. With rats, they are referred to as varieties. There are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, there are like 7 varieties of rat, and they are all like differentiated by things like coat types, colorations, ear type, and whether or not they have a tail. So, according to the American Fancy Rat and Mouse Association, there are 7 varieties of rat. 1, standard, with short, smooth, and glossy hair. 2, the Rex, with curly hair and curly whiskers. 3, the tailless, which has the total, complete absence of tail. The hairless, which as the name suggests, has a complete absence of hair. The satin, which is thinner, with a longer coat, and like the coat has like a lustrous sheen to it, and the bristle coat, which has a stiff and coarse coat. And then each variety is grouped into six sections by color and body markings. I am not going to go through all of them. I am not going to tell you every single one of the 40 distinct colors because I'm not putting anyone through that, and I'm not putting myself through that either. But the six sections are self, any other color pattern, silvered, marked, and odd eye. And that's your wrapped basics. So a little on domesticated versus wild rats. Wild rats grow to about 9 to 10 inches, and domestic grow to about 11 to 12. There's a couple of factors that go into this. Like, domesticated rats tend to also be bigger in general because, firstly, they lead a much more they have a much richer and nutritious diet, because, they've got humans feeding them, whereas wild rats don't really have that, and they limit their interactions with humans because humans are scary and they are predators. And so it's not exactly like you're going to be feeding wild rats. There's also the deal that domestic rats live to about like 2 to 4 years, and the longest living rat in captivity lived to be 7 years old, whereas wild rats typically live like 1 year, but can live up to three. So you've got a lot more time to grow a lot bigger and a lot fatter in that time. The coloring is also like the most obvious difference between the two. Like, there is a massive variety of fancy rat colors. Like, there's the 40 different colorings that you can get. That is a huge variety. And then you and like wild rats are usually only ever like brown or black for the sake of camouflage.
Yeah.
So, like, there is a chance that if you, for example, just saw a picture of a brown rat, yeah, that could either be a domesticated rat or it could be a wild rat. But if you see a rat with like white and black markings, that's probably a fancy rat. That is a pet and not a wild rat. We will get onto like other people's attempts to feralize domesticated rats later. But like, no, that's 99% of the time, that's just gonna be a pet rat. So I have a few notes about the domestication process in general. Because the domestication process is like when you're purposefully doing it, it is a combination of natural and artificial selection. And captivity is stressful when you're not putting active effort in to make it like not stressful. So like zoos, for example, will put in a lot of effort into making sure that their captive animals are not stressed, are in a good and healthy environment, are doing okay, and don't have to like deal with the enormous amount of stress that you might otherwise put an animal under in the process of intentional domestication. So, like, a rat is out in the wild. It has like wide open spaces to run through and explore, a lot of hiding places. They don't tend to like they tend to not come out during the daytime. They're mostly nocturnal, so they like are not particular fans of bright light and noisy situations, and they also don't have that much contact with predators because their instinct is anything new or novel is to be timid and to run, and if you can't run, to be aggressive. So they do show aggression towards other rats, for example, if their territory is invaded, which is not a trait that is bred out of domesticated rats because you can't really do that very well. But you put them into a confine you put them into captivity. The first generation of wild brown Norwegian rats, you put them into captivity. And it's a confined environment with very few hiding space. It's bright, it's noisy, and you have contact with predators, i.e. humans, who handle the rats, which is going to be stressful. And that sets us up for hurdle one, which is reproductive failure. There is a study by Clark and Bryce in the 1980s, like 1980 to 1981, who studied the reproductive failure of a large group of Norwegian brown rats throughout generations while they were domesticating them. So reproductive failure is very, very common in wild and early generation animals in captivity. So in the first generation of wild Norwegian rats, only 49% of them could successfully copulate. And then only 43% of rats who were able to give birth were also able to raise some to weaning age. All the rest of the babies were either cannibalized or abandoned. And this, you know, I'm not entirely sure how it matches up to birth rates and reproductive failure in the wild. I haven't been able to get any sort of clear answer regarding reproductive failure of wild brown Norwegian rats, but there is like a pretty clear indicator that this is incredibly like a stressful situation, because normally wild and domesticated rats both will have a litter of about like 10. There'll be about 10 per litter from the first generation right down through to on average the 20th generation. That is not, you don't produce 10. In the first few generations, you'll produce 6 smaller litters on average. And then what, like only 43% of like rats will be able to raise at least one of those to adulthood. Like that is a giant watershed. Like that is most of your initial population wiped out, whether due to like them dying from the stress of captivity or just from like, just them not being able to reproduce because they're stressed. So you end up with, you kind of then get to hurdle two, which is adapting to captivity via both natural selection and captivity. So those most suited to survive in the wild are most likely to die and fail to reproduce, because they are used to being nervous and skittish, and they desperately want to run and hide, and they are not going to go with the flow of things. And the passive and less fearful and reactive rats are more likely to survive because they are under less stress, and therefore they're more likely to reproduce. So between this and the hurdle one of reproductive failure, like, by the fact that they don't die as easily in captivity, and also they can more successfully reproduce, you end up with animals who are, like rats, who are quite different from the original stock of rats that you brought in. Which, by the way, is a problem with conservation efforts too. Like, if you breed, like, endangered animals, there is always the risk that you will end up creating a breed which just will not survive in the wild because they've been bred to survive in captivity. That is a real risk that people are under. There are like control measures put in place, but there is like always the chance that you will just end up with a population that is vastly different from the population which currently exists in the wild. So hurdle three is artificial selection, where humans come in. Humans, in this case, are breeding for tameability. Usually, initially, they'll breed for tameability. So, humans have a natural preference towards easy-to-handle rats. And with preferential breeding, you can breed using the rats that are easy to handle. Like, there are both environmental and genetic factors towards tameability. But, like, humans are always going to want to an animal to be tame if they're trying to domesticate it. So, for example, for an environmental factor, you could have like bad experiences with humans at a young age. And for a genetic factor, I know it's kind of treated as an old wives' tale for there to be like a link between coat patterning and temperament, but there is like a legit link, and it's been proven that there is like a link between coat pattern and temperament. And rats are in like some, but not all species, and rats are no exception to this. Like some rats are just more tame because of their color. Non-agouti rats are more docile than solid colored agouti rats. And approximately 80% of domestic lab rats are non-agouti for the sake of their tameability and their handleability. So I have a quick anecdote from my friend who were in the lab my friend worked at. They had both Long Evans and Sprague Dawley breeds, or like strains of rats used for neurological research. The Long Evans rats were apparently all sweethearts, but the Sprague Dawley rats were not, and they were able to measure this with a higher number of bites from the Sprague Dawley rats. Like, it was measurable in a lab setting that, just based on the strain of rat that they were, one rat was more prone to aggression than the other. No other factors had changed except from the fact that one was more aggressive than the other. I've also got a fun fact about like Sprague Dawley and Long Evans rats. So there was a study done on the difference between movements between Sprague Dawley and Long Evans rats, and they found that Sprague Dawley rats behaved like the Long Evans rats with motor injuries, which raised questions of the efficacy of using Sprague Dawley rats for neurological studies. And this deficit is likely due to poor eyesight from albinism in Sprague Dawley rats. So if you can't see what you're reaching for, you might be significantly less coordinated in reaching for and grabbing it. And I know this for a fact because I'm significantly less coordinated in reaching for and grabbing things than any of my sighted peers. So it makes sense that it would also happen in rats.
It does.
Back to tameability. There is a study on the effect of early handling by humans by Galef in 1970, where he took second and third generation wild rats with a bunch of like variables to like make sure that like he was covering as much ground as possible. And it found that only direct handling experiences with humans was associated with ease of handling and like and capture slash timidity. Like there was no effect though on aggression towards other rats or new objects, which means that you can the things that we see as like domesticated rat activities, like and behaviors, you can't just force them to have by forcing them to, be okay with being handled. Like they're still going to have the initial innate behavior. They will just be less aggressive to humans. So this is a reminder. If you have rats, make sure you handle them a lot. Like they need to know that you're okay. And also it's going to make your life a whole lot easier if you do. It's kind of the same with any sort of animal where you do need to interact with them. And rats being incredibly social and domestic rats being bred to be not afraid of humans, you gotta interact with your rats. I know that Ro was a very big fan of their rats and interacting with them like at every given opportunity. The amount of rat pictures that we have, or of like selfies with various rats just like perched on their head or their shoulder or like nestled into the back of their hoodie, or like rats are just very, very social animals. It is very interesting to me that like you can sort of breed like force second and third gen rats to be okay with you handling them, but you can't like force them to be okay with new objects suddenly being put into their enclosure. Like they're always going to freak out about that. Before we're too harsh on wild rats, it's not exactly like domesticated rats do well in the wild either. Like it is very rare to see feralization of domesticated rats. Like there's probably been like some successful attempt where one random rat has managed to acclimate to the a wild situation. but it is more likely to fail than not. So between 1916 and 1929, this one guy called Donaldson made 9 attempts in total to establish feral albino rat populations, all of which failed. And I think it's very funny that they picked albino rats because they can't fucking see. I would fail too if you put me in a situation in which I can't see. And if like you put me in a wild situation where suddenly a bird could eat me, I think I'd do pretty badly too. Why choose albino rats? You just want to see albino rats in the wild? Like, that doesn't seem like a good idea. They can't fucking see. You could have picked literally any rat, which might have, has a better chance because the fact that they have better eyesight. I don't know if they picked purely because, like, maybe albino rats are, like, less likely to be tame than others, I'm so confused. Why albino rats? They can't see. And we, so, like, as a general rule, feralization of rats doesn't generally happen. Like, your rat might be able to survive a little bit out in the wild, like if you was to release them at random, but chances are your rat's gonna die pretty quickly because it's not used to A, having to find its own food, B, having to find its own like protection, C, predators, and D, running from humans. It wants to be near to humans and interact with humans. Like, these are not a good setup for it to live in the wild. And I have a final fun fact with you. In a study done by Rawls, he found that domestication leads to a loss of brain weight. So over the 20 generations that it takes for rats to stabilize their population, or like they stabilize their litter size, they lose approximately 8.1% of their brain weight. Their brain just shrinks. And then it's a similar thing happens in a lot of other animals. And in pigs, domesticated pigs lose 33.6% of their brain weight. And when you release like domestic mammals back into the wild, they do not experience an increase in brain weight, and they do not return back to the same as their wild species. So you could, like, in the first few generations, for example, you are always going to see wild, like, domesticated pigs with the same loss of brain weight. I don't know if this ever increases ever again. It wouldn't surprise me if it eventually did, because, if you breed it out of them, you could eventually breed it into them. But it does go to show that, like, it's not innate to how they. To the situations that they're under captivity, if the second that they're released, their brain weight doesn't increase. It's not to do with the fact that they're living a cushy life. It's something else. Who knows? And that's my info dump on lab rats. Oh no, that's my info dump on lab rats. I had to, yeah, I stopped there before I was went too far deep because once again, I was finishing up these notes at 7 a.m. I do think the most charming thing that I've learned about this entire thing is that people call rats pocket puppies.
Oh.
Because they act like dogs, but in a much smaller body. Because they're playful, they're sociable, they have pretty distinct personalities. You can train them, you can give them puzzles to do. Like, they're quite food motivated because they're animals, and animals tend to be food motivated. And they just seem like I always loved rats, but they are just incredibly charming creatures. And the more I found out about them, like the deeper appreciation I've had for A, what happens in the 20th century to give us rats, because we haven't really had fancy rat breeds for very long, like 100 years plus a little bit extra probably. But and B, like, yeah. Just how neat little guys they are. They're just little guys.
They are, they're just little guys.
Even if they do like pee on you a little bit, just amongst you as their own.
See, my dad had rats when he was a teenager. And my mum has always said that she would never let one in the house. She wouldn't let him have any. But yeah, he had them as a teenager, and he misses them, I think. He loved having rats because, yeah, he used to train them to do tricks. He used to train them to, like, run up one arm along the back of his shoulder and down the other one. And then he got one that was pregnant, and no one told him that it was pregnant, and it bit him when he tried to pick it up. But, like,
yeah,
that's what happens when you try to touch an animal that does not want to be touched. Like, you know.
Yeah. They make it perfectly clear that you should not be touching them.
Exactly.
So this has been a very short memorial episode where I tried my best to stay on track and then just ended up going fully into the science of domestication instead. And would have done a little further research on domestication syndrome, but we didn't quite get there before 3 a.m. So
Ro mentioned a couple of times as the episode topic, autistic rats. And I wonder if you ever got to the bottom of what that might have meant, because all I could think of was the rats have autism, and I don't know if that is actually what they were talking about.
The only thing that I could think of is rats showing, like, heavy preferences for certain things, like heavy preference for very strong sense for routine, for example.
Yeah.
They do not particularly enjoy very loud noises, even, like, after domestication. They also tend to show preference for certain toys and objects and fixate on certain activities over all others. So the best that I can think of is that if you put those traits into a human, that would be autism. But I'm not entirely sure on that. But we can probably, like, ask Rose's husband, and he'll probably let us know, like, if he knows anything about that. And then we could do, like, an extra fact check corner where at the end we're like, here's the autistic rat's deal. I guess I'll close out here for the very short memorial episode. Look, Ro, I know you loved rats in general, and specifically the day-to-day of owning rats and their behaviours and then being pocket puppies, but, like, domestication and its variants and strains, brain shrinkage is very cool. Thank you for listening to Hey, I Like. If you like what you heard, you can listen to more of us on YouTube, podcasts, Spotify, or beyond anywhere else. I'm not sure if we are.
Apparently Google Podcasts is getting, like, shut down.
Oh no.
I didn't know that. But Kent mentioned it a little while ago, and it's like, what?
So if you're listening to us on Google Podcasts, you might no longer be listening to us on Google Podcasts soon. We have a Tumblr, heyilike.tumblr.com, if you want to visit us there. We also have Patreon, whose link will be probably in the description. Thank you for listening.
Yeah, I guess it is. Goodbye from me.
And goodbye from me.
Yay! Thank you so much for listening. If you've made it all the way to the end, congrats! You're officially much stronger than half of our friends. If you're enjoying listening to this podcast, please subscribe so you get notified when we update, or sign up for our Patreon at patreon.com/hey_i_like, where you have a direct line to us, the creators. You can also follow us on Tumblr at heyilike, which is all lowercase. That's all for now. See you next time on Hey, I Like.